1979, baby. Let's get it, creepy uncles. gonna flirt? We know he's got that energy. He's got to flirt. They're all flirting with everybody. That's like what creepy uncles do. They're like, hey, you're filling out nice there, kid. Looking good.
Yeah, sure.
Welcome to Horror Movie Survival Guide, Disco Citizens, the podcast where gorehounds
and best friends Terry Gamble
and Julia Marchesi break down a different horror movie each week,
exploring a multitude of genres, subgenres,
and sub-subgenres,
classic and cult,
international
and underground flicks alike, determining which films are the goriest
and offering up Horror Movie Survival Guide tips
to help you stay alive.
Hello out there, Disco Citizens. Welcome to another fine episode of Horror Movie Survival Guide. I'm Terry, and
this is Julia. This week we are talking about 1979's Zombie. The title of this episode is Demented, Cruel, Evil. And the tagline for this movie is, We are going to eat you.
Well,
I like it. Yeah. Cool. This was written by Elisa Brigante and Dardane Sacchetti, and directed by the infamous Lucio Fulci. Had you seen this film?
I had not.
Have you seen any Fulci, as far as you know?
I don't. I'm looking up his stuff right now.
Okay, because he's done a billion things. And I was actually very surprised because we hadn't done this. So this is a round of gore that we're doing. We wanted to really highlight the delicious effects in horror movies. And I realized that we had not done this. And I don't think we've done any Fulci at all, which is surprising because he's one of the big ones.
He's done so many movies here. And like The Black Cat, I feel like I might have seen... But I don't know. I don't think I've seen any of his movies, which is wild.
Yeah. Well, here we are. We're making it happen.
Yeah.
So this, we had shout out, of course, we're talking about makeup, makeup by Gianetto De Rossi, and this makeup is killer, if you get my meaning. I would also like to shout out, this movie is also in Video Nasty, which we also always love. We go, yes, if you're that depraved to be on the list where England says you can't watch this movie, then...
You know it's got to be good. That's what we want to see.
Yeah, that is us.
It's like when you're at like a banned book list. I know some people are like, "Oh, you don't want to be on the banned book," but it's like sometimes it's like that makes everyone want to see it, read it more. This is what it is here for that, for sure.
Freedom of speech. Come on, you guys. Anything you want. So this is one of there's a very big rash in the 70s of Italian, these like really hardcore. Horror movies, Cannibal Holocaust and that kind of stuff comes to mind. We will not be covering Cannibal Holocaust on this podcast.
No.
I saw it once. Never watch it again.
I'm good. Yeah, I'm good.
We're fine. This is pushing us far enough into this territory that's, you know, an acceptable level. So opening shot, I will say, this is one of my favorite opening shots I've ever seen. This is opening shot of a gun pointed at you. You are looking down the barrel of a gun. Opening shot. It's like, that's pretty fucking good. I like that.
Yeah, there's nowhere to hide, even if you're the audience, is what they are setting up. It's like, you guys, I know we talked, I think, last week about Return of the Living Dead, how there's, like, nowhere to go. And I'm just like, the way this movie is starting feels a lot like there's going to be nowhere to go. Oh, no.
And that being at the barrel of a gun might actually be a merciful act later in this movie. So it's opening in a gun, and then it shoots a zombie all wrapped up in canvas right in the face. And he says, the boat could leave now. And you're like, huzzah! We got brains within the first 30 seconds of this film.
Yeah, I knew this was going to go hard. I started watching this movie, Julia, and then I saw that it was too late at night for me. And then I was like, nope, can't do this tonight. And I had to watch it another day because that was the first 30 seconds. And I was like, oh, yeah. I know we're in the gore round, but also like, I don't want to watch that right before I go to bed. So I'm gonna save this for another day for a midday viewing. Holy goodness.
Yeah, well, because we've done, you know, we did Maniac, which is this kind of like no joke gore, right? And then we did Return of the Living Dead, which is kind of goofy gore. So, you know, after coming off of Return of the Living Dead and watching this, like, whoa, this is a different vibe.
Yeah, this was a little harder, a little more crusty, but gotta love it. So we show up on a, we see a slow sailboat going through the New York, looks like harbor. Just slow going. And it reminded me a little bit. We just recently went to see Voyage of Demeter, Julia, at the theater. And it gave me a little bit of those vibes where I was like, oh no,
Which is funny because I watched this movie and The Last Voyage of Demeter on the same day. So I was like, I got a ghost ship day. I got a double ghost ship day. That's pretty unusual. I like it.
That is. That's like a good programming. Honestly, I would put them together like somewhere. You know, I feel like that would be a fun little like play on programming. Yeah.
Yeah. It would be fun to go ship weekend
or something. Yeah.
Ghost ship weekend. Mm-hmm. That doesn't sound very exciting. I mean, like I wouldn't want to be on a ghost ship for a weekend is what I'm saying. Watching movies about it. Way more exciting.
That's what I knew what I meant. Anywho,
I know
yes.
what you mean. Yes. We, you know, obviously this is also one of the things that really delights me about 70s horror Italian movies is the fact that some of the actors are speaking Italian and some of the actors are speaking English. So they actually can't understand each other on set, but they're just talking back and forth. And because everything's dubbed, it doesn't matter. And it always makes me so happy because it makes it feel so, so low budget, even if it isn't. But I also just, it gives it a different feeling than any other kind of cinema.
Okay, my brain just went, that's what, okay, because I was like, why is there a mouth? I thought my TV was out of sync or something, but that is what was happening.
Uh-huh. That yeah, because all those Italian horror movies, there's no sound set. So it's just, they're just dubbing everybody. So it doesn't matter what language they're speaking on set because they're not going to use that anyway.
That is a buck wild. And now mm-hmm. that explains, I've been going down like a rabbit hole, as you know, if like Tubi's just keeps recommending stuff for me and I'm just like, da, 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 like just mainlining all these like lesbian vampire horror movies
yes.
like, constantly. And so there was one I watched recently that I was like, I couldn't tell like what language it was supposed to be in. And that's why it was an Italian that was dubbed in English. And so mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that's why that guy's mouth did not line up. And thank you so much for teaching me something new today.
Yay! The more you know.
No.
This ghost ship is in. The cops come to see what's going on. There's no one on board, and the cabin is all disgusting. And a zombie comes bursting out of the closet, and we have a great cop zombie battle where the cop rips some of its skin off, which is really fucking gross. And then we have a neck bite gore fest. So I know that Fulci. So Dawn of the Dead had been released quite similar to here, and in fact. In some countries, zombie, this one is called Zombie 2 because they called Dawn of the Dead Zombie in Italy, but made it seem like this was a sequel or related, or there was a prequel to this, and there's not. So they're totally nothing to do with each other.
They're totally separate, but they absolutely could be programmed together and feel like they are in a very similar world. That is what.
Yeah, for sure. It's just like different takes on the zombies, but I know mm-hmm. Fulci specifically wanted to go back to the roots of what a zombie actually is. Right? It started out as, you know, a Haitian voodoo thing and like this
and was the Catholicism.
And this was something he wanted, like, okay, let's take it back to this and not in this kind of modernized way of George Romero from
he went
Raised
history and etymology. History and etymology.
Yeah.
Julia, as a history nerd, a fellow history nerd, delightful, right?
Sure. I'll take zombies any way I can get them, to be honest. but you know, the thing about this film is it feels dirty, like physically dirty, and it feels so sweaty, and it feels like everybody's just uncomfortable for this whole film, both as actors and characters. Like everybody's
just
miserable.
It's that 70s sweaty. There's something about 70s sweaty movies that just like.
Yeah, because we just watched Maniac with Joe Spinell, and like that's a sweat fest.
Oh, yeah. I was like, the AC is not what it is now, for sure. Probably for the best environmentally, honestly. But there is something about that, like. Everything that's disgusting also on this boat as they're at the beginning too, like between the maggots that we see constantly and like the way the blood looks and like, you know, every location is hot. Like it's like that hot time of year in the summer where it's just like, you know, New York, if you've gone there and it's sticky hot in the middle of the summer and it just, you get the heat, not just the heat, but the humidity, as they say,
right.
It's pretty gross. And it's absolutely adds, I think, to the tension of that kind of Summer of Sam, you know, kind of energy.
Oh yeah,
right?
For sure.
Where just everyone's already on edge because it's too hot and people are angry because it's disgusting mm-hmm. and dealing with loss. And then, you know, a questionable death of this cop and then what's happening on this boat and how it came back and based on the captain's log, like all these things. So, yeah.
Yeah, 100%. So the cop, the other cop shoots the zombie off the side of the boat. And now the boat, now we have zombie swimming towards New York. So we know that things are, what's going to happen with that? We don't know. But we have a news editor who we come in, Peter West, who is going to be there, who they make fun of for being British right off the bat. And I can't hear his British accent barely at all in this movie.
Oh, you know? I just went Brit Reporter right away. He sounds like a British dude.
Brit
it's
reporter.
Like light, but it's more transatlantic maybe. than full Brit, but that's depends on where he's from. And we also talked to Miss Ann Bowles, the captain's daughter, plays by Tisa Farrow. And describe, what would you say? You said she's a combination of, who was it again, Julia?
Oh, because when I saw her, I was like, oh, well, she's clearly Mara Farrow's sister. Like, they look almost identical. But if you took Mara Farrow and mixed her with Sophia Lillis, this is who you would get. And
yeah,
that's a good combination.
Pretty great combination, both amazing actors. Yeah,
and it's one of those things, because we talked about in Maniac, like Carolyn Monroe. I'm like, she seems above that movie, not in a bad way, because I love Maniac, but like as a, you know, being like a hot, sexy.
She seems too glamorous for that show.
Too glamorous,
and like, she's too sexy, too sexy.
Yeah. And I feel like for this, like Tisa Farrow is way too delicate and seems unlikely to be the heroine of this film.
But that's what makes it so great. That's why I think it makes it great for her too. And also though, the fact that people keep underestimating her the whole time through this movie too, they're just like, she's like, no, like even when she's trying to get, you know, when they're trying to charter this boat to go and hunt for her father, or see or find, investigate what happened out there on the island with him. You know, she has to like really assert that like, no, I grew up on a freaking boat. I know how to be on the water. Like, don't look at me like that. Like, I got you.
Yeah, because so, she looks so small and delicate.
So slight.
But she is a lion inside, small but mighty. So we have Ann sneaks in the boat in the middle of the night because this is her father's boat. Father's gone missing. She wants to get clues. Peter has also snuck into the boat. And so now they have to do this ruse of they're making out and the cop comes to find them because they're not supposed to be there because it's a crime scene. But for me, I'm like, you just say, I'm on my father's boat. Right?
No, but it also looks suspect if you're on your father's boat, though, too. That is a closed crime scene.
Sure,
so
sure.
You have to have some sort of alibi or some sort of reason just besides I'm looking for the crime, because they literally told her, like, we're going to look for it. We got it. Like, they're like, please, little lady, don't be out here, you know, kind of thing. They've already chastised her. So I get why they would go for it. Also, I think they were kind of flirting a little bit. So there's a little truth in that lie to ride along with, as you do.
I feel like Peter flirts with every girl he sees. I feel like this isn't a unique
1979 baby. Let's get it, creepy uncles. flirt? We know he's got that energy. He's gonna flirt. They're all flirting with everybody. That's like what creepy uncles do. They're like, hey, you're filling out nice there, kid. Looking good.
Yeah, sure.
So she talks to him about how he's supposed to go 3 months away to the Antilles, and they're trying to figure out what they can do. And they do that weird flirting thing. And we find out more about there's some like weird disease that was on board. They decide that they're going to fly down to investigate together, right?
There's a letter from her father that they find. So I will read you the letter.
Oh, please.
Of course. To my daughter, Anne, in case anything should happen to me, due to my morbid curiosity, I have managed to contract a strange disease. They're taking care of me as if I were some sort of guinea pig. And I know I'll never leave this island again, at least not alive. I haven't been a good father, but I have always loved you. One last kiss from Dad. So that's where, like, okay, we got to go down to this island. So it's off of the Dominican Republic. So it's somewhere they have to go to the Dominican Republic and then try to get somewhere else from there. So we have a groovy 70s airport scene, which I highly appreciate.
I totally wrote that. I was like, big for Julia. I was like, she's probably so excited. I was like, groovy airport terminal, very Pan Am. It's got like the cool, like that installation that they have, I think, right now. They have like that Pan Am installation, I think, in New York as well, too.
Oh, it's TWA.
TWA, thank you, yes.
It's at the JFK. Mm-hmm. It's a TWA hotel that looks like groovy 60s.
Looks exactly like this.
My friend David just sent that to me yesterday, and he sent it to me not only because he's like, you'll like this whole thing, but they actually have like a little Tab shrine that's like Tab from the years for Tab and like a little bit about it. And they had like big statues of Tab. And he was like, there's some Tyler Durden who has like made this hotel that is you. That's like, who else would have a Tab shrine? Yeah. Everybody loves Tab.
No, they do not.
RIP. I miss
so sorry.
Tab.
So sorry. But it's funny. I love that. And shout out to Tavy, if you were listening to this, from who handles the Kith Online website. I remember seeing her pictures, like going through this amazing exhibit and just like drooling over it and just being like, oh my God, I'm so glad she got to go in there and see all of this cool stuff. So
they are trying to get to Motul. So they find two Americans who own a boat, Susan and Brian, who are going on a 2-month cruise through the islands, having a good time. Peter and Anne ask them to take them to Motul, and they say, Motul is cursed. Everyone says it's cursed.
And
we're going on vacation.
honor what the natives say. Like, if the natives say it's freaking cursed and you probably don't want to go there, there's probably good reason. I feel like this is very strange watching this around the time of like the Maui fires and stuff like that too. And people being like, please don't come here, like constantly. And it's like, you really just need to respect. If native culture is telling you not to go to a place, you probably want to skip that place.
Yeah. Sure. So they we also meet Dr. Bernard and his wife, who are living on this island, Batul, and the radio isn't working. So they are kind of cut off from the rest of the world.
But they're trying to call out. And his wife is losing her shit. She is already a twang twang. Like, she's like, get me off this damn island. Get me off this motherfucking island as soon as possible. Please, sir.
I am in her shoes, man. If I'm on an island where everybody's dying because of some strange disease, and your husband looks like he's kind of losing it. You know, he's going for like some sort of Nobel Prize gleam.
Gleam in the eye. I was like, nee, 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 nee. I was like, Julia, he has got the gleam. And I was like, oh no, he is trying to use these freaking zombie things, because he thinks maybe that is the key to forever life, is what I'm getting from him, is that he's like, if we can figure it out and harness it and keep people kind of alive, they could stay alive forever.
Yeah, it's, you know, being a zombie is immortality in a way. Right. If you don't starve, like, or if somebody doesn't like, actively
you vamp out, you gotta be Dracula and eat blood, or else you gotta zombie out and then you have to eat brains. They're like,
vampire's the way to go in that one. So Dr. Bernard doesn't want to leave, but his wife's like, please, I would like to leave now. But he says that as soon as he understands the phenomenon, they will leave. And you're like, sir, you're just kidding yourself here. You've already gone.
He slaps her. Because she's like, loses it when he tells her this. And that's where we get, she tells him he's demented, cruel, and evil. And you're like, yep, this is going to be a problem.
But we also get a bit of him where we know what's going on, because he injects it. He draws his own blood to look at under the microscope to like make sure he don't got it. But we will see if he got it. We don't really know. And here comes the part of the movie that I would say most people would know this movie for. We got some topless scuba diving, followed by a zombie shark battle underwater.
I gave this sequence 2 thumbs up, kids. I'm smiling enthusiastically because I was like, wait, what? Okay, so they're on the boat, you know, hanging out, the double couples, basically, the fake couple and the real couple. And the real couple, the lady, is hot. Susan's hot. And she just is like, I'm going to go diving since we're out here by these beautiful blue waters, and puts on her little diving apparatus. But her diving apparatus is her basically going down to like a thong, like bottom, and that's it. And then putting on her flippers and her like scuba tanks. And she's like, okay. And a swimming cap. Like, she's going swimming in like a swimming pool.
I wondered if she put the cap on, because I kept looking at her hair the whole movie. Like, is she wearing a wig? I think she's wearing a wig. And if she's wearing a wig, that's why you couldn't show your hair underwater. It's because it would
just fall off.
Right.
Also, she's definitely wearing a wig. Also, it's easier probably for a stunt double if you're in underwater have that, the match, if they needed to do that too.
I feel like there was a stunt double. I feel like that you saw her face in most of these shots, I felt. But I don't know. So shout out to the guy who was like, yeah, I'll wrestle a shark. Our man who was like, yeah, I'll wrestle a shark. Got it. Let's do it. What a scene. Zombie versus shark. It's what every 12-year-old boy's dream.
Honestly, yeah. It was like boobs, zombie, shark. And within 2 minutes. So yeah, this is the part where you're just like, okay, we're in, and we pass this VHS to our best friends, you know, down the street, and we're all gonna get together and watch this again and again and again.
But I like that the zombie gets a little chomp on the zombie. Like, they chomp each other. Like, everybody gets,
yeah, they're like, I see you, Predator. You know, I see you. And it's like, hey, now we're both zombies now. And that's like kind of the thing where it's like, respect.
Right.
Like, that's a zombie shark now.
Right. Because a zombie bites the shark. So now it's a zombie shark, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's fun. I mean, how different is a zombie shark from a real shark, though? Because a real shark just kind of cruises around and then eats stuff. So it seems like it's not really much different.
Real sharks don't actually eat people. Like, really?
No, I'm not saying people.
I'm saying, now he probably will.
Okay.
That's what I'm guessing. It's like, he's like, he gave him a little appetite for it.
Well, maybe. Where's that movie? I'm sure somebody's made it. I'm sure there's a zombie shark movie.
Oh, for sure.
probably.
It's similar to Sharknado, that. I'm sure. No, I haven't one of my seen favorite Sharknado. Movies of all time.
Oh. Jesus. No, thanks.
They were, right. So when I was at Comic-Con this year, they had a Sharknado panel because it was the 10-year anniversary for Sharknado. And it took all of me to, I had to get out of there because I needed to go do some other things that evening, but I really wanted to go wait in that line after I did my panel. Ian Ziering was there, the whole crew. I was man, I really wanted to go stop and say hi.
Anywho. You are so cute. So on the island, all the natives are leaving the village to go inland because they want to go do voodoo with their new juju man, who they say there are people possessed by demons, is the rumor. So we have Lucas, who is Dr. Menard's little Renfield, basically, like who's like trying so hard to please him and get everything done. Like he's clearly being the intermediary between the village and the doctor is not easy for him on either side. And you can tell he's already kind of freaked out because he knows how serious these other people are taking it. And he's got to convey that to Dr. Menard, which doesn't really work.
Yeah. This is where things I think are really starting to go awry as well. And it's terrifying, but also can I just talk about, I just want to mention the music, the soundtrack of this island music that sounds like some Jimmy Buffett tunes while they're on the boat. I just have to like shout out the soundtrack.
Do you remember that time we went to Margaritaville? That was so terrible.
I freaking love Margaritaville. That was the worst service we ever had. But it was also like, you know, middle of pandemic and you know, whatever. That's Universal City Walk. Shout out. I love Jimmy Buffett. I love Margaritaville. I love the show Margaritaville. Meet the musical. I had some friends of that on Broadway. Obsessed. But I was just like, this music is so disconcerting. Against this, like I was like, I know it's about to go bad and these people are all about to die, but why are we playing this sweet tropical music before? Anyway, it just delighted me
to lull you to think that everything might be okay,
and I was like, no, quit playing this music, they're about to all die. So anyway, that's just, I just had to give a little shout out to the soundtrack.
So we didn't have enough boobs, clearly, so we need more. We are on board. The doctor's wife starts taking a shower. It's a very long contemplative shower. She's really weighing what's
going
on.
She's washing the energy and anger out of her hair. She's trying to calm herself down. That's the kind of shower I feel like she's doing. It's also probably just disgusting hot. So it's one of those things where as soon as you get out of the shower, maybe she's doing a cooling one. You're going to be sweaty again. It's like that kind of vibe, I feel like, where they're at as well. But she looks really concerned, like really acting hard out of those eyes, like of like, oh, I got to get out of here. Trying to make myself normal, trying to calm down. But you know, while she's distracted, trying to calm herself down, the zombies are outside. And I know that Miguel was charged to watch out for her while the doctor was away. But, you know, you leave one guy out there to just look out for her when there is a horde of zombies rising, potentially. Yeah, probably not going to work out great.
Poor Miguel. He tried to do the best he could. Well, this is the thing, is that he had promised the wife that all of the zombies were on the other side of the island. Like, there's no way they could get to you. You're totally safe. It's totally fine. So we have a zombie attack. She ends up crunching some zombie fingers in the door when he's trying to get in, and then does the classic mistake. So horror movie survival guide tip. Once you have locked yourself in a room, step away from the door, because if you put your back against it to rest for a moment, the thing is just going to come for you and it's going to be bad.
It's shooting through the door for sure. It's going to grab you through the door.
This eye gag is spectacular. Like, if you are able to keep your eyes open for this entire gag, I applaud you.
Yes, I was. Slow motion, practically, where it's like, okay, so of course the door gets fucked up as the zombie, like, punches through, basically, right? And so there's a little piece of the door that is, like, flipped, like the door jam, so to speak, that becomes essentially a little spear, a little stake, if you will, that's going to stake through the eye of this gorgeous woman.
Yeah.
And it's just that kind of, you're welcome for the sound effects, guys. That was me crunching an eye, like it was a stake through the eye, a wood stake through the eye.
Yeah. I wish I could see this movie in a horror, in a theater to hear the groan of joyous disgust that people would give this number, because wow, it's really, really good. So the boat's drive staff is crapped, so they can't leave. Everybody. So they know that they were trying to think about what they could do. They end up shooting some flares to see if there's anybody on the island that can help, because they don't think they can make it to the next island. So they had planned, Susan and Brian, they just kind of drop them off and be like, see you later. We got things to do. Because they did. They were going on
their vacation, honeymoon kind of thing. Yeah.
It's not going to be a nice honeymoon.
No. And we also get scenes of like some of the other people on the island, like the villagers and the natives and stuff like that, that have been, you know, being treated in this hospital. That's just really an experimental lab, so to speak, you know, where it's like kind of like they've been used for this experimentation, and a woman crying out, Mio corazón, her heart. And she's like, yeah, I buried him. And then all of a sudden, you know, he's walking again. And so it's like, she's like, I don't know, like, if this is good or bad. It's just very, very scary.
People have been dying so much that they have a mass grave outside of the hospital. So that's the level that we're at. And really, it's just Dr. Bernard and his long-suffering nurse who is just... I don't know why she stays. It's just a miserable time. Mm-hmm. But I think she probably feels like she can't abandon him because that's like he has nothing, no one else. But Dr. Bernard doesn't seem as concerned as he should about any of this. He seems kind of matter of fact. It's fine. We're going to figure it out. He just wants that Nobel Prize.
And it's all fully out of control, quite honestly. And he is trying to stay calm. So maybe that's just what he does when he's stressed. You know what I mean? Where it's like that hyper, like, I'm a doctor. Okay, things are falling apart. What can I do? Okay, what's next? So, you know, my friend's about to die. Make sure that this letter gets to his daughter and make sure that he finds rest. And here you go. And like, you know, you get matter of fact about this. And yeah.
So the Scooby gang meets up with Dr. Bernard and they ask about his father, her father. And he's like, father's not, you know, kind of went badly.
This is what happened. Yeah.
So he asks them to go check on his wife because he has to stay at the hospital. So they take his sweet little Jeep and they drive it over. Like, it's pretty, I don't know if I would trust strangers with, it doesn't matter, drives the car to.
With your Jeep?
Yeah, I'm like, I just met you. And I'm like, here's my car keys. Go check out my wife.
If there's
house.
Like a zombie apocalypse essentially happening that you've created and you want to make sure your wife is not being eaten already, even though you told her that she would probably be fine. Yeah, I would send him. Okay. Especially since he knows that they're related to like his friend and stuff like that too. So I think that's a little different than full stranger. It's like associated stranger.
Sure.
Right? So,
but the zombies have already infiltrated the village, so things are really progressing, and they do find zombies munching on the doctor's wife very placidly. Like, these zombies are not, like, crazy rage, nothing. Like, they're just taking their time.
They're eating a meal real slowly, but they're pulling out her guts and just, like, you know, just they've got her basically out like a big filet. She's a buffet. A Jimmy buffet?
Oh, no. A smorgasbord? I am your smorgasbord.
Yes. As they boringly eat the board, smorgasbord. So they're like, well, I guess we got to get out of here. And they hightail it out of there as the zombies try to chase them a little bit. But Brian gets them and they drive away. But as they're driving in the Jeep again, trying to get away after seeing that lady filet, they crash the Jeep because all of a sudden part of the car, the radiator goes out, essentially.
And there's a zombie on the road. They're trying to get away from it. So he breaks his ankle in the crash, of course. So now he's like got to hobble along and they're really, really slowed down.
As soon as someone's got to hobble, you're like, oh, and it's a zombie thing. You're like, oh, you were definitely body count, dude. So sorry.
Yeah. Once you break your ankle on the zombie apocalypse, sorry, folks. Kind of time for the lunchboxing. So they say when the earth spit out the dead, they will come back to suck the blood from the living. So they now split up. They're like, at first they're like, no, we can't split up. And they're like, actually, we got to split up because Peter can't go. And so they're like, okay, well, Susan and Brian will go and go forward and send back for help. But they end up just kind of going a few feet away and then sitting down, which is a little strange. But then they find a conquistador helmet in the dirt. And he's like, hey, look, this used to be a graveyard. And you're like, oh, no.
Yeah, and they see the little, like, signs of, like, the old inn and, like, the old cemetery. And then all of a sudden, of course, since they're in an old-ass cemetery, and they talk again about science versus voodoo, so we get a little more of the lore while we're here, because now we have the conquistador portion after we've already kind of had the, like, voodoo witch doctor kind of portions earlier. And so, of course, Anne and Peter are going to get attacked in the cemetery right away.
While they're making out, can I just say that? And we just talked about Return of the Living Dead last week, where it was all sorts of sexiness going on in the graveyard. So I was like, let's just continue that theme.
So be careful when you're having sex in a graveyard. Also, kids, horror movies have a good tip. Probably don't do it there.
But that's kind of fun. Yeah, I don't know.
Tempt fate, I guess.
Yeah, well, I guess because you never know when the zombie apocalypse is happening. So I guess the point is to never go in a graveyard. But Hollywood Forever is so beautiful.
It is beautiful. Hollywood Forever is great. I love Forest Lawn over in Glendale. Okay, anyway.
So they're attacked by a zombie at the same time that another zombie bites out Susan's throat in a delicious spray of blood, which cuts his head off.
As she sits there and watches him in slow motion freaking rise, I was like, lady, run. But she's just like,
fight, flight, or freeze.
And she freezes so hard, and she just was just like, is this real? My brain will not compute. Very Call of Cthulhu. Like, my brain will not take it. I am not going to be okay.
Yeah. Instant insanity. So I really love they have a zombie POV shot of them rising out of the ground. So it's like the dirt falling in your face as you're rising out. I like that. I don't know if I've seen that before. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no, that was really nice. So the zombie, you know, has blood on his mouth, and after he's chomped her neck, and Peter comes and chops off the head of the zombie as it turns around. Brian runs to go hug little Susan, and it's just, you know, they're not okay now. The remaining crew, they hobble back to the hospital / church, but things are looking bad as everyone's trying to hunker down because the night is falling.
Yes.
And it's about to get worse as night falls because then they're going to have less visibility for any of these creepy things happening.
So they learn from the doctor that they show themselves in, learn that this started about 3 months ago, and the zombies then start attacking the hospital. So they get a very brief respite, and then all of a sudden they're attacked. So there are several people who are about to get bitten fairly quickly in a row, and all of them seem quite oblivious to their surroundings, which I would say, if in this situation, I was like, sit in a corner and just kind of watch the room seems like a good idea. But also, I feel like I would be so hyper aware in this situation. There's no way I would just be like, no, no, and just
get him. They seem so lackadaisical, but either they're just in shock. Do you know what I mean? They're like, it's the only explanation I can really have for that. And even if you were to go to a corner, we do have that fear again, like we talked about when you're by a door of like somebody just reaching through. So you don't necessarily want to be by a wall, but you also want to be able to see what the heck is all around you. So there is kind of like that trade-off of like, okay.
So you just need to be like on a sit and spin and just kind of like slowly revolve as you're
a lazy Susan.
Yeah, exactly. In the middle of the room, you just spin slowly and then we're all good. So there are so many good headshots in this movie. So Menard gets his face eaten off by his pal Fritz, and Brian shoots Fritz, and then Lucas gets bitten, and then it's like and then the nurse gets, and then they all come back. Like it's going to be it all happens very quickly. It's like, I feel like it would, like everything seems to be okay, and then it just kind of slides downhill.
Yeah, it gets really exponentially bad really fast. This is, you can feel as like the crescendo too of the movie. And the soundtrack too, honestly, this is another soundtrack shout out. I was very, I guess, keyed into the music. It sounded like the intro of a Cake song by the band Cake. I feel like they've taken that same little da-dun, da-dun, whatever that they have towards this part. And I was like, oh, okay. I've heard this again repurposed in pop culture. And maybe that's where they got it from. So anywho.
Cake, we have questions for you. We should shout out the music's done by Giorgio Tucci. So his music's making you feel all the things.
It's so good. And so they have, so they are, you know, getting what they have available. They have some weapons, some bullets, some guns.
Molotov cocktails.
Yes. So hopefully some fire might help in this situation, as we've done in most of our horror movies. I've got movies oftentimes. We've talked about that before. Yes. Fire is often the way to go.
Fire is often the way to go, unless you're in Return of the Living Dead or it's a ghost, you know, but there are definitely, this is, and fire normally does kill zombies.
Yeah.
So you feel like, okay, that's, but you know, you also run the risk, you're inside in kind of a wooden tent that you can potentially catch on fire, and then you're stuck in there on fire.
Yep. But also like, I mean, you're just, I guess you're defending till you can't anymore, right? So it's a tough choice. This is a very tough choice here.
We got some good full body burns going on, though.
Yes.
Hi, Shout Matt out Dynan. To our friend Matt Dynan, who full body burned and lived and is fine when he was a teenage boy. We always like to shout him out when we get a full body burn. But full body burns here, and it's just everybody's, so Lucas gets bitten, he gets shot by Brian, by Peter, and then Susan comes back, and it's that moment of like, it's not Susan anymore.
And he's like, okay, well, you got to shoot her. So,
cause he gets bitten by her, and immediately he's like, okay, well, there you are. And then they get back on the boat, even though it's broken, and Brian dies, even though he's like, save me. He's trying to not die. And he doesn't know.
And he's shivering, and he's already pretty much dead, because I was like, oh, if you're already cold, dude, so sorry, you probably already dead now. But they were like, and they're taking him back, and Anne's like, I don't know if we should have him here. And she's like, we need to leave him here. And he's like, no, like, the only proof we're gonna have, they won't believe us unless he's with us.
I don't think that's the real reason. I think the real reason, because he's a reporter and that's his story, and he wants to have that for the story, and that's the only reason he's taking him back, and that's the excuse that he gives her. So that seems more legit than it actually is, because at the bottom of it, that's the whole thing about it. He just wants a story, right? Which now he, like, you know, like, we had the Nobel Prize game. This is like the Pulitzer Prize thing. They're like, I'm going to go back and I'm going to write this story that's going to be the biggest thing anybody's ever seen. So I think that's
he needed that to corroborate his story. That's awful. Exactly. But you know, when you come back to a place where there was one zombie left and you've been gone for a little bit, what you going to find?
New York has been taken over by zombies. And that is, there's nowhere to go now. You're stuck on a boat forever because you can't go anywhere. And then Brian wakes up. And so, you know, nobody's safe. Everybody's fucked. And we end with the zombie hordes on bridge going into New York City to
on
further
the Brooklyn
infect.
Bridge. Yes, it's gorgeous.
Hey, man, downbeat endings. Thumbs up. And zombie movies very usually do have a downbeat ending, I feel like. It's very unusual
to get
ones that are
away. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can't really contain them once there's an outbreak. It's very, very difficult.
So how do you survive zombie, Terry?
You join them.
I feel like, okay, I know the boat's broken, but I guess you can, I mean, it will drift, right? You could probably just keep going until you found a place that wasn't.
With no food, no actual good water. Mm-hmm. You're probably going to die on the boat somewhere and then become a zombie yourself.
Yeah. I don't like it when we don't have good answers to how, and we never find out where this started. Like, what it, like, is it a disease? Is it a curse? Is it a,
you don't know
thing?
If he resurrected it. Like, you don't know if like, you know, Dr. Menard, like, was like the one who helped like resurrect it, or he like tried to isolate it, or maybe it was happening.
And her father, right, says, because of my morbid curiosity, I got infected.
Because it's like, maybe he was like, oh, this is like a leopard's colony or something, essentially kind of a thing that they like treated it as, right? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. So terrifying, absolutely terrifying. Gore factor.
Please.
It's pretty obvious, kids. I know we're doing a gore round, so I will read these anyway. 1, not enough blood to fill a Dixie cup. 2, a puddle of blood. 3, enough blood to gross out the average viewer. 4, a bathtub of blood. And 5, run for the barf bag. If you guys didn't already know, this round is a gore round, so it is a 5.
You can always count on zombie movies to give you a good amount of gore. Even silly ones, like even Shaun of the Dead, like really brings you the gore, right? So that's what we go to a zombie movie for.
For sure. When they're going to eat body parts, it's like when you're getting cannibalism from zombie to human kind of vibe. Yeah, it's going to happen.
So movie ratings, Chainsaws, 1, if you're desperate, 2, barely qualifies as a horror film, 3, seen worse, seen better, 4, not too shabby, and 5, fantastic, horrible. I gave this movie a 4. I like this movie. I like this grimy 70s feel. That's one of my favorite feelings. I feel this movie does that well.
Absolutely. I also give this movie a 4. I think we've watched so many zombie movies at this point, Julia, that like our bar for zombie movies is very, very high. So this one is great. Obviously, the effects are freaking phenomenal, and it is terrifying. I just feel like it's missing like that last little zhuzh.
Dance number is what it needs. I mean,
it does need a dance number.
Every movie's better with a dance number.
I mean, we did get some Buffett music, but not quite dancing.
Just, you know, wiggling. Not really the same. Thank you for listening, everyone. We would love to hear what you think about Zombie. This is a classic one. We're so glad we got to cover it. And we want to hear what you think. So you can talk to us on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. Terry's on Blue Sky. All sorts of the goody social media. I don't even know what Threads is. I mean, this is how
Threads
far
is from gone. Instagram, but it's like Twitter, but it's Threads. So it's only in America, I believe, because Meta is not available in a lot of Europe. Anywho, we're on the internet. I'm online.
There's going to be one day where people are going to look back at this conversation. It's going to seem so antiquated, and I'm looking forward to that day.
No, it's like when I talk to my friends, I'm like, remember Friendster? Because I had that, like, for sure.
I
was like, Friendster, MySpace.
Just left in the dust. I don't understand how
we
it
miss
works.
You, Tom.
Oh, he's on. Have you ever seen him on Tinder?
Oh, I've not seen him on Tinder. No, he's not in my swipies.
Oh, well, I did not swipe
in yours,
up.
In your sorry, circle,
sorry.
Huh?
Sorry, Tom. We also have a Patreon.
You must have some friends in common, I'm guessing, because sometimes I get some random celebrities where I'm like, oh, we have friends.
So you can find us on Patreon. You can also find it if you'd like to support us. We also have a Teespring if you would like to rep us. We always appreciate that. We appreciate you, listeners. We love us some gore. I hope you've appreciated our gore round. We always love to get the goody bloody. And we, you know, as we know, we like to look at it from a makeup point of view and look at the beauty and artistry of what they've done.
As they say, gorgeous. Oh,
it is. It is.
Absolutely gorgeous.
Fantastic. Gorical.
Aw, thanks guys so much. We'll see you again next week. Bye.
Have a good one.
Thank you for listening. Horror Movie Survival Guide is independently produced by Terry Gamble, Julia Marchesi, and Sierra Ryan. Hey, that's me. If you would like to support the show, find us on patreon.com/horrormoviesurvivalguide.